Everybody, welcome back to the Daft on Draft podcast. I'm your host, Dalton Miller, joined as always by my co-host, the fake Corey Kinnon. Monday Night Football is on as we speak right now. Nobody cares about this Monday Night Football game. We care about what happened this weekend in college football. Not a whole lot out of the ordinary, I don't feel, this week, but we have that to talk about. We have helmet stickers. And I might have a dark horse for the best team in the country.
Ooh.
Corey, how are you doing today?
That's interesting because we just spent a lot of time off air talking about if there was a single good team in the country. So I'm excited about that little dark horse.
Well, there is. I think, and that's the problem. Let's just get this out of the way real quick. I think that there's a bunch of good teams.
Yeah.
There might be like three or four great teams. Uh-huh. But even like right now, I don't know who they are.
Yeah,
it's your like, Oregon has been the most consistent. They kind of beat down Ohio State, who we thought might be the best team in the country. We thought Alabama might be. Alabama has looked horrible recently. Georgia is always around.
Yeah.
And so, but like who?
I think I might know who your sleeper is, but I don't want to spoil it, so I won't.
Well, try to guess it. And then if
Do they have three highly touted draftable defensive linemen?
And they do.
And one of your favorite cornerbacks in the class.
And no, not one of them. Not one of them.
Your favorite cornerback.
He is my favorite. He's not the best corner in the class. He's not the best corner in the class, but he is my favorite. And he, you guys have to look this up. I swear to God, I'm not lying. He actually posted this. It is in a video thing. So you have to, or a picture slide on Instagram. So you have to slide it over. But Will Lee III posted a picture of Garrett Nussmeier on the couch with him and all of his defensive teammates standing behind the couch in white t-shirts. Oh, I think we all know the photo. And in big black bold letters, blacked on it.
He trolled the hell.
He's
an elite troll.
He is an elite troll. And it's just, it's the Gen Alpha, or I guess he's Gen Z. It's the Gen Z version of Jair Alexander's trolling on the field when he was in college. But it's Will Lee, and he's doing it on social media. And I was told by a reliable source that the blanket he didn't actually send to Theo Weiss. So that is a little bit unfortunate. But he did actually post that picture, and that is an elite troll. That is elite DB energy right there. Yes, my sleeper team is Texas A&M, because if they can get that offense going, that defense is dangerous enough, not just on that front line, but on the back end with the cornerback play, to be a potential contender in the college football playoff.
Yeah, I mean, it's over, Wigman Bros. I think that's the place to start there as well. It's over. He's going to tear it up with G.J. Kinn at Texas State next year. We'll hope for that pairing. That'd be a fun pairing. But he's definitely going to transfer out next year. Definitely going to happen. But I think Colin Klein really loves quarterbacks he can run veer with. He can run read option with. He can run some RPOs with. So I think Marcel Reed. I mean, we saw Marcel Reed through like four passes in the second half. He didn't come in and light up the world of the air. He did have that deep ball, like the one he needed to hit. He hit.
Yeah.
Which was huge. But really, he sparked that team with his legs. And you know, looking at Colin Klein, what that Heisman year he had with Kansas State, and then he kind of ran that same offense of how he succeeded in college at Kansas State with Adrian Martinez, with Will Howard, before coming over to Texas A&M. And so I do think Marcel Reed is more of his brand of quarterback that he would prefer to operate with. I think again, Marcel Reed has a really bad arm though, so like that's the only thing that's like holding me off a little bit, is if like they put him in a position where he has to throw, he cannot generate a whole lot of velocity on
it. Well, and that's the thing, is you have to be able to play from a neutral game script or play out in front with that defense. It makes it a lot easier. And also the option is pretty damn difficult to defend as well. So, and they actually, I believe, have a pretty decent offensive line overall. So I think it's a pretty good offense. And their
best lineman was out this game too.
Yeah. So I think that they're kind of the sleeper in the middle of the pack that I think is a legitimate college football playoff contender. But let's get into the rest of the slate that we want to talk about. Texas eked away a little bit of a win against Vandy. I actually did not catch any of that game. I was traveling up. I was seeing my brother and sister-in-law up in Connecticut this weekend, so I didn't get as much college football. My brother was in the Navy, so we we tried to watch the Navy game, and that was a fun watch for me to watch my brother be absolutely just hopeless by the time the second quarter rolled around. So that was great.
Yeah, that one got out of hand fast. That one got out of hand fast. Yeah, the Texas Vanderbilt game was just okay. Again, I just, as long as Quinn Ewers is playing quarterback for that team, I don't think they're gonna elevate at all. Of course, Isaiah Bond was out too, so that limited some explosiveness that they have. But Ryan Wingo still might be their fastest player on that football team. And I mean, it's excruciating to try to watch Quinn Ewers play quarterback right now. Like, it's excruciating to chart Quinn Ewers because he's just throwing screens. He's just checking everything down, throwing bubbles to running backs. It's brutal. I saw a tweet today. His ADOT is, his average depth of target is 5.7 yards right now, which ranks 79th out of 79 quarterbacks in the nation who have met a threshold of minimum attempts.
Yep.
It's brutal. It's brutal. Which just allows teams to hang around because they're not scoring. They're Texas and they are putting up 27 points on Vanderbilt. They put up 15 points last, like they're just not scoring points with yours at quarterback.
It's Mac Jones offense with less efficiency.
Yes. More talent, less efficiency, more lower half talent, I guess. Ewers can
run. Oh, we're talking about the quarterback. I thought you were talking about the situation.
Oh, no. That 2020 Alabama.
Yeah. I was going to say that.
Yeah. No. That he was two first round wide receivers, a first round running back, a first round offensive tackle. He had everything he needed there. It's brutal. And I said it last episode. I think they need to start splitting reps before they get to Kentucky, because I think if they go up against that Kentucky defense with Quinn Ewers, it's going to be a long day. I really do. They got Florida this week. They got Arkansas next week. And those two aren't walk like cakewalk games either. Arkansas has been giving people games. They gave LSU a game. That's not an easy opponent either. Florida, you might be able to split some reps there because I think they're a very poorly coached team. Yeah. But they are starting Lagway now, which is, I mean, Graham Mertz towards ACL, so it's not like a great situation that Lagway is starting, but he is the better quarterback. So they are starting the better quarterback finally, but that team is just a mess. I really do think they need to, because then you're getting to Kentucky and then we just talked about Texas A&M potentially being a dark horse for the best team in the country. Like, you're sitting at one loss. You probably get in with two losses. But you lay a stinker against Kentucky and you lay a stinker against Texas A&M. Are you getting in with three losses? I don't think so. So,
well, I mean, at this point, how good is Kentucky? I mean, they just lost to Auburn.
That's true. They did. But they do this every week. They play Georgia hard and then they play some subpar team weak. They play Ole Miss great. They play some other. They play to the level. It seems like they play to the level of competition every week.
Yeah.
It's a bizarre team to watch. Also, their best corner is out, a potential first-round pick, and Maxwell Hairston hasn't been playing for weeks. He's only played four games a season, and I don't know if he's going to play again this season. So that kind of sucks. But for the most part, though, Florida, Arkansas, Kentucky, I do think Kentucky can be a little bit of a tricky game. But I think they have to start splitting reps, because you can't go to Texas A&M with this version of Quinn Ewers, or you're going to get dominated. Like, you're going to get blown off the ball. You're going to get smacked in the face.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to watch.
Let's talk Ohio State, Nebraska, because that game was close. I didn't watch any of it. You are in that area, so I assume you caught at least some of it.
Yeah.
What happened? Because there was a lot of Ryan Day talk on the timeline, I noticed.
Yeah. Columbus is ready to move on from Ryan Day. I just think, you know, Urban Meyer handed Ryan Day probably a top two program in the nation And collectively as a program, if you look at the teams that they've beat versus the teams that Eli lost to, like Ryan Day apologist will show, like, be like, well, he's 61-9. He's only lost 9 games, but like playing Big Ten football, you don't get a lot of credit for beating up on Rutgers and Maryland and teams like that. He has beat Penn State, but Penn State and or James Franklin and Ryan Day are kind of in the same mold of head coach, in my opinion, where
they are the Spider-Man meme.
They are. Yeah, they are the Spider-Man meme. But he can't win a big game. He can't seem to get his team ready for big games. And I mean, they almost slipped this one away to Nebraska, who just got absolutely dismantled by Indiana. And I don't think Raiola played particularly well in this game. They were bad. And again, Josh Simmons is out for the season, and their backup left tackle is terrible. Like, let's call it what it is. Like, he's a turnstile. Which kind of falls back into offensive line recruiting a little bit, if that's kind of your backup option there. But I just think for a blue blood program, probably a top 2, top 3 brand in all of college football, this team lacks a significant amount of toughness. I mean, I think they showed it against Oregon. They showed it against Nebraska. They've got Penn State this week, and then they've got Indiana the week after that. So we'll see if they can survive this 2-game stretch. But I mean, they're another loss away from going another season without playing in a Big Ten championship game.
Yeah,
they are one loss away from going a half decade without playing in a Big Ten championship game. We're talking about Ohio State. Like, that's not acceptable. That's not an acceptable standard for Ohio State football. Especially when you see what talent is doing at the NFL level. And like, then you look back at their time in college and be like, how could they not win with this talent? Like, it's kind of bizarre.
Especially with the quarterback play that they've gotten up until this year,
this year.
Yeah.
And yeah, so what happens over the next 2 weeks.
I completely erased the Kyle McCord year from my brain.
Yeah. But I don't think this team has 11-12 game toughness. I don't see it. Right
now. And let's talk about the team that beat them earlier in the year, Oregon, who absolutely dominated the Illinois game. They're on a roll. I love the weapons that they have. I love Evan Stewart, love Tez Johnson. Jordan James, the running back, is somebody who I don't think anybody's talking about right now, and I haven't watched him in depth, but I did watch that offense a couple of days ago, and he really flashed to me as well as a jitterbug type back, and I think he's listed at like 210 pounds, so he's not a small guy either. And so that offense has a lot to it. And then Dylan Gabriel is a very, very, very experienced quarterback. This feels like a team that, listen, is he an NFL quarterback? No, he doesn't have the juice. Could he possibly be the CFL MVP? Absolutely. But he is the type of dude who can point guard that team to a national championship if they can get competent play defensively, which they have talent on the defensive side of the ball. They have a lot of really experienced guys in that secondary, and they have really good defensive line talent there as well. Linebackers just don't seem to matter at the college level these days. Like, there's not a single team that I look at outside of Alabama and say, ooh, they get some good linebacker play. Mm-hmm. Like, not a single team.
There's just so much spacing in college football. You want safeties and nickels.
They don't matter. Yeah. It's all safeties and corners these days. Yeah. And like me and my dad were talking about this, like Penn State used to be linebacker U. They're still linebacker U, but the linebacker has now stepped down to the edge, and it's Micah Parsons, and it's Abdul Carter, and it's Chop Robinson. And it's gone from off the ball linebackers to pass rushers at this point. And Micah obviously played off the ball in college, but I'm getting a little bit off script here. Oregon is the best team in the nation right now. They've proven that so far this year.
Yeah.
And they have the recipe of that, like, really old college basketball team that makes a run in the tournament because they have all of that veteran leadership. And I think that that's the type of team that they have there this year. And I'm really excited to see what happens in the rest of Big Ten play and then in the college football playoff with that team specifically.
Yeah. I think you default to Oregon, and looking at the rest of their schedule, I mean, they're going to play in the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got Michigan who can't score touchdowns. They've got Maryland who can score touchdowns, but they're really streaky. Like, they'll score 40 and then they'll score 14 the next week. It's really bizarre to see what's going on in this Wisconsin and Washington. So four teams that
they should beat.
They should dismantle, to be quite frank. I would love it if we got, again, this would take them beating Ohio State in 2 weeks, but man, an Indiana, Oregon, Big Ten championship game.
That would be funny.
That would be really funny.
It's so interesting to me because you see the difference between USC going to the Big Ten and, like, obviously lacking the kind of toughness that you need for Big Ten play. And then seeing Oregon with that offensive line that they have built there with two pro and pro talents at tackle there. And then a defensive line that has Jordan Birch and Harmon. And I can't think of the one tech's name, but he is also an NFL player. So they have the trench play that we have always talked about a little bit with the Pac-12 of them being a little bit softer than the Big Ten and the SEC. And Oregon is proving that coming from the Pac-12 doesn't really matter for them. They have that toughness to play in the Big Ten.
Oh, yeah, for sure. All that Nike
money. Lincoln Riley teams do not. Yeah, no. The Nike money definitely
helps. The Nike money certainly helps. I'm curious about Big Ten tiebreakers, though, because Indiana and Penn State are both undefeated in the Big Ten. And this would assume they would both beat Ohio State, which that's not a gimme game by any means. And Ohio State could win both of those games.
Yes.
We wouldn't be surprised. But, like, say both those teams beat Ohio State and they go undefeated in the Big Ten, we would have three Big Ten
undefeated Big Ten. Yeah.
So that would be interesting to see how that tiebreaker works. I'm not going to look at the rules right now. I don't really care to. But, yeah, that's just something that popped in my mind.
And that's why we need divisions, ladies and gentlemen, so that doesn't happen. Let's get to our helmet stars.
Yeah.
We talked enough about this college football weekend.
Yes.
Where do we want to start?
Yeah. So let's start with the pass rusher. We've had some conversation on this pass rush class about how all these guys are sawed off and probably sub-package pass rush specialists who aren't going to see the field on early downs. I'm going to give a helmet sticker to another one. So let's go to North Carolina. Kamon Rucker had been pretty hurt. He played week one, didn't play again until week six. Kind of took a little bit of time to build back up. This week against Virginia, he went off against Virginia. Again, he's a fifth-year guy. Again, this NIL COVID year eligibility stuff. We got a lot of these older guys, but He finally went off. Again, he's coming off a season with 60 pressures and 8 sacks. Didn't have a sack entering this week and had 6 pressures entering this week. In this game against Virginia, he had 7 pressures and 3 sacks alone. And again, I do think he has some burst, some juice, and some bend. But again, he's listed at 6'2", 265. He's probably 6'1", 250. So I would say, again, another one of those sawed off guys. That's a little bit more density than a guy like Jalen Walker or a guy like Josiah Stewart that we've talked about as another, some of those sawed off guys. But, yeah, so I'm going to go with Kamon Rucker. Again, has some nice little juice off the edge, especially for a fifth year player. Again, usually we tend to overlook fifth year guys because if they're a fifth year guy, why didn't they declare for the draft 2 years ago if they're that good? NIL and the COVID year have certainly changed that perspective and changed that perspective, you know, with guys being able to just make money at the college level now.
Yeah. So. I definitely have kind of stopped looking or stopped caring as much about guys being fourth or fifth year or even sixth year guys at times. Just because of that, it's just a different college football landscape that we live in today. One thing that I will note about anytime we're looking at this stuff, to start my journey, I always kind of look at PFF's data to see how players had performed the week prior, you know, see what the yards look like, see what the receptions look like, how many tackles, stops, sacks, pressure, stuff like that. And sometimes it just doesn't make sense what a pressure is and what a pressure is not, because I watched Nick Scorton, I watched Westmoreland, the UTEP guy, and it's like I have trouble giving somebody a pressure when they came unblocked. I have issues giving somebody a pressure when they're winning after 3.5 seconds.
Yep.
And so for me, I like to then sit down and watch the tape and go through why these guys actually did it, or interceptions where they just gifted. So for me, I went through and Texas A&M defensive back, slot guy, Brian Mays, senior, might be a fifth-year guy, actually. But the two interceptions that he had in this game were fun. The first interception was on a broken play, Garrett Nussmeier rolling out to his left, trying to make a play. He stuck with his guy after like 5 seconds. He was actually in zone and then ended up matching up with him and carrying him vertically. And the ball was thrown high. He rose up and caught it well. And then the other one, he was the apex defender. And Garrett thought that he was going to carry number two vertically. And he passed number two off and jumped the hitch slot fade. And he jumped the hitch and picked it right off. It was a great play by him.
That play
showed some of the flaws with Garrett Nussmeier post snap that I had this discussion with Max Toscano on Twitter about. He agrees with me. I love Garrett Nussmeier pre snap.
Yep.
But when the picture changes post snap, he is just not that. Like, he just doesn't have. You can tell he started only 8 games in his college career. He just doesn't have that yet.
Yeah, I actually wrote an article about Nussmeier today and broke down the film from that A&M game. And that pick in particular. And then if you watch, he does it again the very next play. The first play of the next drive, he pulls an RPO back and he throws it to him again as an apex defender into the flat. Like, right to him again. Yeah. And he didn't pull that one down. It was more contested with the defensive back than the first, or with the wide receiver than the first one. But he did it literally again the very next play. And what's crazy about that first pick is the boundary corner is clearly playing cover three leverage. Like, he's clearly playing cover three leverage. So, like, I don't know what Nussmeier missed, because the guy's hips are open. He's clearly bailing.
Yeah.
It's bad. It was ugly. I do like, I think there are some other, like, kind of protection flaws with Garrett Nussmeier that I saw, like, 6-on-6 in the box, and he's clearly calling out a slide right, but then he doesn't anticipate, like, a blindside rusher to his left. Like, that's something you got to pick. Like, you got to know if somebody's coming from your backside, then that's on you if you're sliding protection to your right. Like,
yeah,
just some stuff like that really bothers me.
There are a lot of inexperienced things with him that need to get sorted out. I went back and I watched some of his later tape from the season, because I was not a huge fan of him earlier in the year, but super inexperienced guy. I do think that for the most part, he is getting better as the year goes on. I'm seeing more especially from an accuracy standpoint when he is off structure, has gotten a lot better as of late. My issue is that he does have some Tony Romo in him, for better and for worse, when it comes to being off structure when he doesn't need to be. A lot of the pocket stuff, the innate quarterbacky stuff that he's good at, but there are also times where he overdoes it as well. So he is a very interesting case study, somebody who I legitimately think could have a Joe Burrow like ascension if he stays in school and gets the experience and then kind of converts, because Joe Burrow was solidly a day three guy before that year, but he became a professional quarterback as a grad student. And I wonder if Nussmeier, with his father being a quarterback coach, with time in the offseason to train with some of the best in the nation at that pro level, I wonder if he can become that NFL quarterback going into his final season of college football.
I think it would be a huge benefit to him. But it's kind of the same thing with Joe Burrow. Like, there's a lot of room to question the tools that Joe Burrow has, the physical tools that Joe Burrow has.
Yeah.
But he's just a professional quarterback. But I also do question kind of the physical tools of Nussmeier a little bit as well. I mean, I've talked about the arm when he doesn't have a base underneath him. You know, the lower half tools he's not a good athlete.
They're not great.
No. So, like, I think there's room to question some of the ceiling as well. But I do wonder that as well. The other question is that LSU has one of the top recruits in the nation coming in as a freshman next year that they're paying a lot of money to. And so does LSU want him to declare? Because that could put them in a sticky situation of losing the quarterback that's supposed to be coming in. And there have been rumors that Michigan might have poked their head back in there as well. So I don't know if there's some anticipation there that he might be going back to school. So it can get sticky on the recruiting level a little bit too. Like, does
Garrett Nussmeier to USC?
You think Nussmeier would transfer? See, I think LSU would be a pick where like, no, he would stay at LSU, but I think, I think.
Or I mean, he would go to the NFL. I mean,
yeah, that's what I would say.
Declare.
Yeah.
He would declare.
But yeah, LSU is kind of in a sticky spot there, deciding between like if Nussmeier were to come back. But yeah, I mean, I'm still where I'm at with Nussmeier. And obviously the second half, that didn't really move me. Once he saw, like, he was getting post snap rotations, he couldn't pick up a million, like it was moving a million miles an hour.
Yeah. And shout out to the entire secondary for Texas A&M, because I think they played some pretty incredible. And again, that's kind of why I'm so high on them, because I think that just as a unit, they played some really good football. Another guy in the secondary who has been talked about, I think, for 5 years now, and I think he has finally started to get it. This is Alabama safety, slot defender, whatever you want to call him, Malachi Moore, who I think just overall has been playing some really good football so far this year, and I wanted to bring that up. But he did have an interception in this game. He did have another pass breakup. He already flies downhill, but I think he has really turned the corner in coverage. I mean, his grade this year in coverage is fantastic. But for me, as a 23-year-old in a formerly Nick Saban defense, I expect you to be one of the better players in the nation. Yeah. I expect you to tackle. I expect you to be able to force from the alley, and that's stuff that he does at a really high level. Putting the coverage together in the slot, specifically in the SEC, where so many of the best targets play almost primarily from the slot, has been a lot of fun to see as well from him this year. I think that he's probably a day three guy, but one of those day three guys that I could see, you know, having a starting role in the NFL for a couple of years.
Yeah, I agree with that a lot. You can get a lot of value out of those nickels if you know how to deploy them at the NFL level.
When I watch him, I think Dennis Allen, nickel guy, like that. I can't think of the name of the safety who they used to play in the slot all of the time. And he was listed as a safety. He was not listed as a corner, but he played as their fifth DB all the time. And I think that that's kind of a role that he could fit in there.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to go to the Big Ten for my second helmet sticker. And I want to talk about another guy, like another wide receiver in this class. I feel like there's a million day two wide receivers in this class, which means a lot of good receivers are going to start going day three as a result. Or we're just going to see a massive run of receivers on day two. What we usually do anyway. So, but I'm going to go with Minnesota wide receiver Daniel Jackson. Daniel Jackson's really smooth, man. I really like this kid. A really smooth route runner. Understands leverage. Understands subtle ways to separate. He might not be a top-tier athlete, but he does all the little things really, really, really well. In this game against Maryland, and I love the two Maryland receivers. I talked about them last week. And Ty Felton had a good game. Not so much Prather, but it was Daniel Jackson who came away with 12 catches, 117 yards, and two touchdowns on 12 targets. Or 9 catches on 12 targets. I'm sorry. 117 yards, two touchdowns in this game. And a big win for Maryland. And a big win for Minnesota. Man, these schools. A big win for Minnesota over Maryland. It wasn't close. So I'm going to go Daniel Jackson, listed at 6 foot, 195. So, you know, not a huge defender, but again, I'm not a huge receiver, but a really good football player, a really solid football player. Second helmet sticker.
I feel like Minnesota is the king of not fantastic athletes, but just silky smooth wide receivers.
Yeah.
Rashad Bateman was silky. I wasn't a huge Tyler Johnson fan, but like he was definitely not a great athlete. So
he's a converted quarterback. Yeah. It is.
Chris
Ottman Bell before all those injuries set in.
Ottman Bell, dude. Yeah. I was so in on Ottman Bell before all the injuries. I really, truly was. I liked him a lot, especially like in his freshman year when you could really see the flashes.
Yeah.
But my guy, my third guy here, I'll just go to, is not the quarterback from Miami and maybe not even the starting running back from Miami anymore, but Damian Martinez, who I think has, over the past 2 weeks specifically, helped his stock a little bit. Now, as an NFL draft prospect, I don't know what to do with him, because anybody who runs almost exclusively gap power and is slow behind the line of scrimmage, like every single play is press the line of scrimmage, jump cut, find a hole. Like, it's slow, and you just can't really survive like that unless you're Le'Veon Bell, mm-hmm. and he's not Le'Veon Bell. But when I watch him run, he runs with that type of anger and veracity of James Conner, where like he just does not want to go down, and he will try to bowl you over. He has a little bit of juice. I will say that he has a little juice, especially horizontally. Like, those jump cuts have some juice to him. But I just, as a prospect, I just want you to hit a damn hole if it's just get there. But big day for him. The play that was probably an 8 or 9 yard game that turned into a 53 yard scamper, where it was a pile. He was lifted up in the pile, but he was still getting pushed forward. Everyone kind of stopped, and he spun out and just kept running. That was his big play, so that was a chunk of his yards. But he had 5 15-plus yard runs in this game, and a couple of them were really, really nice runs as well, where, yep, a little bit slow pressing the line of scrimmage, but he found the hole, exploded through the hole, broke a couple of tackles on his way to 14 or 15 yards. And if you can do that, if you can be a 3 yards and a cloud of dust guy, but have the athletic ability to make a couple of big plays here and there, it's really all you need to get into a rotation at the NFL level. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was a lot of fun at Oregon State last year. I enjoyed his Oregon State tape quite a bit. I do kind of see the same things where it's like that initial burst and the long speed. I would say both the initial burst and the long speed are just like,
Yeah, the long speed ain't there.
No, not at all. But he's a fun back. He's a fun back for Miami. I'm going to go with the running back here for my third one. And it's one of my favorite running backs in the class. I think we talked about him last episode, but I'm going to go with Iowa's Caleb Johnson, who I have a hard time not seeing as RB2 in this class behind Ashton Janti at this point. Like, I have a really hard time not seeing him. He's just so smooth. Mm-hmm. And they run a lot of outside zone stuff. So he's got,
it's going to be pretty.
Yeah, it's going to look pretty.
But his feet with so quick, the outside man. Zone.
Is... At 225, come on. It's mm-hmm. gorgeous. It's so good. It's so good. But against Northwestern, again, he only had 14 carries, ran for 109 yards and 3 touchdowns in this game.
They have a solid rotation there of backs, because their second back is good too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I 7 more missed forced tackles in this game, 3 runs of over 15 yards in this game. Like, he's just such a smooth back. Again, the long speed's not there with him too, but he does have some really explosive initial burst. I think his vision is unbelievable. Like, he can see the backside cuts and outside zone. His feet are so quick. His eyes are so patient. He knows how to set up blocks or wait. Like, he knows how to keep his feet going to set up blocks. Where like no momentum is lost as he's turning in the backfield and being patient. Like, it's hard. And he doesn't get a lot of targets out of the backfield and nothing more than swings or checkdowns, but like, he's got some really soft hands. He's got some really soft hands too. So I would draft Caleb Johnson in the second round and not look back at this point. I think he's a really, really solid player. And again, for 109 yards and 3 touchdowns, 8 yards per carry, 7 missed forced tackles, 75 yards after contact, I'm going with Caleb Johnson for my third helmet sticker.
I think he's awesome, and I wouldn't complain if anybody has him as RB2. I'm kind of waiting and seeing when it comes to between him and Nicholas Singleton. I do think that right now I kind of look at it as what's your NFL team run? Mm-hmm. Are they primarily gap man, or are they more of an outside zone team? Mm-hmm. Because I think that's how I'm making that decision right now. Yeah. Because I do think both of them are really smooth as receivers as well. Nick Singleton can make some absolute plays as a wide receiver. And he did
this past weekend. Yeah. He got a wheel route out of the backfield.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's a 5-star Penn State athlete in that SNC program. He's going to test like crazy. You can see that burst on the field. I do find it difficult to get away.
He's a hell of a pass protector too.
He is a
hell of a pass protector too.
But I have an issue like you do. Just not looking at Johnson's feet because they are honestly
so pretty.
Janty is the best back in this class, but Johnson's feet are the best I think that I've seen. Like, there are better athletes out there. There are, but I just don't think anybody is as smooth as I've seen Johnson in transition behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Like, I'm watching Damian Martinez run into the back of blockers. You're not getting that with Johnson. He's going to get skinny. He's going to find the crease. He knows what he's doing. It is a thing of beauty to watch. It really is.
It is indeed. It is indeed. But that's it. That's our six helmet stickers. We got some college football discourse, a little bit of quarterback discourse in there with Nussmeier, some Texas A&M discourse. There's a lot going on in this episode. But again, we'll do some Dafter draft tomorrow. We'll figure out something again for our Thursday rotation, and then Friday breaking down week 10, which looks like on paper a pretty good slate. We've got Ohio State, Penn State this week. So, which also could turn into a pillow fight based on the toughness of both those teams. But on paper, it looks like a good slate. So a fun week of content ahead here.
It honestly, it might be time for us to start building a board.
It might be. I've got to start finalizing some grades.
Yeah. But we can kind of start building a board together.
Yeah.
Even without grades finalized, because we're going to have to agree on this board.
Yeah.
We can change it, but we're going to have to agree on it. So that's going to be a fun debate with us off air. Anyways, guys, that's it. We will be back tomorrow with Daft on Draft. He's Corey Kinnon, or the fake Corey Kinnon on Twitter. I'm Dalton Miller. I love you guys. Goodbye.